That's Megan Trainor. I'm Nikki Strong, and this is VOA 1 The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Mario Ritter Jr. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today, Dan Novak tells us about efforts to better understand the effects that space travel has on the human body. Later, Anna Mateo and Dan Friedel present this week's Health and Lifestyle Report. We close the show with the lesson of the day. But first,
childhood cancer survivor Haley Arsenault and three other American civilians went to space in 2021. They traveled in a mission called Inspiration 4 for the private company SpaceX. The four-member crew made history as the first all-civilian team to orbit Earth. But they also provided the most detailed data ever on the effects of space travel on the human body. New research based on this data details changes in the brain, heart, muscles, kidneys, skin, immune system, and stress levels. The research also provides information on the activity of cell structures called mitochondria in zero gravity, increased radiation, and other changes experienced in space travel. More than 95% of the health changes, or biomarkers, returned to normal levels in the months after the crew returned to Earth. But some abnormalities, including in the mitochondria, continued, the researchers said. But the data suggested that space flights, at least short-term trips, are not big health risks. "We did not see anything that was worrisome, thankfully," said Chris Mason. He is a professor of physiology and biophysics at Weill Cornell Medicine in New York, who helped lead the research. The studies were published Tuesday in Nature and other journals. Mason added that there was evidence of brain stress during the mission, which has also been found in previous studies. Mason said this might be explained by findings in experimental mice flown to space. The mice experienced disruptions in the blood-brain barrier, a layer of cells protecting the brain. Brain function was not affected, Mason noted. Arsenault is a doctor's assistant at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital in Memphis, Tennessee, and the mission's medical officer. Her three crewmates, two men and one woman, were monitored before, during, and after the flight. They went through extensive testing and provided blood, saliva, and other bodily materials. The research also included information from 64 astronauts who had longer stays on the International Space Station, or ISS, and other missions. Inspiration 4 flew at about 590 kilometers above Earth, higher than the ISS. That means the crew faced higher radiation levels. The beginning of a second space age, led by private space travel companies, has increased the demand to understand health risks, says Afshin Beheshti. He is with the Blue Marble Space Institute of Science in Seattle, Washington, and helped lead the research. Researchers consider the amount of time in space to be an important factor in the health effects. The longer the time in space, the greater the increase in health risks observed, Beheshti said. Beheshti added the data detailed the major effect of spaceflight on mitochondrial and immune function. The new findings indicate that microgravity and space radiation systematically affect the body, leading to dysfunction at the cellular level that impacts multiple organs, including muscles, kidneys, heart, skin, and central nervous system tissues, Beheshti said. He added that spaceflight is known to quicken aging and many diseases. But, he said, the research is identifying major health risks that can be targeted for preventative treatment. The scientists are looking forward in their work. If humans are going to be living and working in space, or living on the moon and Mars, scientists need a basic understanding of how the body responds to space, Mason said. I'm Dan Novak.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. Prince Bhujwani never thought of himself as a negative person. But three trips to the hospital in 1 month led him to reconsider his thoughts, or mindset, toward life. Before May of 2018, he was healthy. He was living in New York City, working at a startup company he founded. He found time to ride his bicycle each day. Yet Bhujwani always felt worried. One day his health began to suffer. He could barely walk. He could not see clearly. And his blood pressure suddenly increased greatly. At a hospital emergency room, doctors suspected he had had a stroke. But they never could find the cause of his illness. A close friend pointed out that Bhujwani had a negative mindset. He often lacked the belief that things would go well. The friend suggested that Bhujwani might be burned out. Bhujwani describes this friend as one of the most optimistic people he knows. Bhujwani said that he started looking at the world very differently as soon as he recovered. He started deep, calm, purposeful breathing. He started taking time every morning to feel thankful to be alive. And he also found purpose in his life by co-founding a nonprofit, Asana Voices, a South Asian support organization. In the years since, he has not had any similar health problems. He credits his new positive mindset. After there was a life-changing event, he said, it kind of forced me to become optimistic. I can't even imagine living life the way I did back then.
Numerous studies over the years have shown a link between a positive mindset and good health. Experts say a standard for measuring someone's optimism has long been the 10-question life orientation test, revised, published in 1994. Questions from that test include, in uncertain times, I usually expect the best. It's easy for me to relax. I rarely count on good things happening to me. Respondents answer using a scale of 0 to 4. 0 means you strongly disagree with the statement, and 4 means you strongly agree with the statement. Optimism means the expectation that good things will happen, or believing the future will be favorable because we can control important outcomes, said Hayami Koga. She is a researcher at the Harvard Center for Population and Development Studies. She was the lead writer on a 2022 study that found optimism was linked to longer lives and a greater chance of living past the age of 90. In another study published in May in JAMA Psychiatry, Koga and other researchers found that optimists generally stayed in better physical health as they aged. Over a six-year period, the researchers looked at 5,930 women who had all gone through menopause. We know that more optimistic people are more likely to live a healthier life, with healthier habits, eating healthier, having more exercise, Koga said.
Some people are born more optimistic. However, it can be learned, said Sue Varma. She is a professor of psychiatry at New York University. She also wrote the book Practical Optimism, The Art, Science, and Practice of Exceptional Well-Being. Varma noted that her book builds upon the work of Martin Seligman, one of the founders of positive psychology. Optimism training, Varma said, can improve life satisfaction and reduce worry. She told the Associated Press that some people are not naturally positive. They are more pessimistic. However, they can learn skills to help see the world more in a positive way. Varma said that even for people who do not naturally see the glass half full, there are skills that you can learn. Someone who sees the glass half full views a situation with hope or optimism. Someone who sees the glass half empty is more negative or pessimistic about a situation.
So, what skills should glass-half-empty people learn to become more optimistic? Begin by noticing how you deal with uncertainty, Varma said. Do you worry and wait for the worst to happen? If you do, then try to rethink the situation in a different way. Varma suggests asking yourself some questions. Is there a silver lining or something good about the situation? Is this a problem to be solved or a truth to be accepted? Varma then suggests imagining the best possible result and a step-by-step path to get there. Varma asks her patients to describe those steps in detail until the problem is resolved. Then she tells her patients to celebrate their success. The result is that people may become more positive and better prepared to deal with difficulties and struggles.
Finding a sense of purpose can also help. Volunteering is a good choice for some. For those who may not have the time for volunteering, Varma suggests bringing your interests to your day job. That could be as simple as organizing outings with coworkers. Another suggestion is to learn something new, whether it is a sport, musical instrument, or a language. Learning a new skill can help keep your mind from thinking too much about negative situations or possibilities. Even with these and other methods, Varma noted that changing your mindset is not easy, but practice helps. It's a tool set. It's a mindset, she said, adding that it is something she practices every day. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Dan Friedel.
Thank you.
You just heard this week's Health and Lifestyle Report. Anna Mateo joins me now to talk more about the topic. Hi, Anna.
Hi, Ashley. Thanks for having me on your podcast.
Your report this week centered on the importance of having a positive mindset.
That's right. This story talks about several studies over the years that have shown a link between a positive mindset and good health. For example, in a study published in May in JAMA Psychiatry, researchers found that optimists, people who are positive, generally stayed in better physical health as they aged.
But keeping a positive mindset is not always easy or possible. What are some ways we can train ourselves to be more positive?
That is such a good question. We all can feel down or sad, but I think the point is to not let negative thinking become your usual way of thinking or your usual way of dealing with a problem. The researchers mentioned in this article are not the first or only ones to talk about these methods. Some suggestions are to first simply recognize your negative thoughts. Say them out loud. Then ask yourself, is there another way to look at this problem? Or is this actually true?
The story notes other ways to live a more positive life, including learning a new skill. What about some other ideas?
Well, you can make your work life happier by bringing some of your interests to work. For example, if you like planning parties, you can be the one to get your colleagues together. And you can also be thankful for simple things in your life, a chat with your friend, a pretty sunset, or just a hot cup of tea.
All good ideas, Anna. Thanks so much for that report, and thank you for answering my questions today.
Thanks for having me, Ashley.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
Mateo.
My name is Andrew Smith.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
You're listening to The Lesson of the Day on the Learning English Podcast. Welcome to the part of the show where we help you do more with our video series, Let's Learn English. This series shows Anna Mateo in her work and life in Washington, D.C.
In Lesson 46, Anna discovers she has a little problem when she sees her friend Marcia. Listen and see if you can guess what the problem is.
Have a nice day at work, Marcia.
You too, Anna. Oh, wait. Do you have pen and paper I can borrow?
Of course.
We are meeting at this restaurant tonight.
What is happening tonight?
Today is my birthday. We are celebrating at 7 p.m. tonight. Did you forget?
Sorry, Marcia. I gotta go. See you later.
Don't forget! Tonight, 7 p.m.
Listeners, do you know what the problem is? Anna gets worried and then leaves quickly when she learns that it is Marcia's birthday. So the problem is, Anna has forgotten Marcia's birthday. Next, we see Anna at her desk at work.
I forgot Marcia's birthday,
and I don't get my paycheck until next week. I know. I'll make her a gift. I'll just have to borrow a couple of things. Amelia, may I borrow your stapler?
Sure. I can lend you my stapler, Anna. But please return it. It's my favorite stapler.
When you watch the video, you will see that Amelia keeps her stapler, an office tool for connecting pieces of paper, in a special box. Amelia acts like her stapler is a very valuable item, like a piece of expensive jewelry or a special family photo.
Well, some people really do like their office supplies.
That's true. Now, let's look at the language Anna and Amelia use. They use two very useful verbs, but these verbs sometimes cause confusion for people learning English. The verbs are borrow and lend.
Anna needs to borrow Amelia's stapler. That means she wants to use Amelia's stapler and then give it back to her.
Amelia gives Anna the stapler to use, but she expects Anna to return it to her. When you let someone use something, but expect them to return it back to you, you lend it to them.
And don't forget to use the correct prepositions. We borrow from someone, and we lend to someone.
Remember, the borrower receives the item, and the lender shares or loans the item.
Notice that Anna says,
Amelia, may I borrow your stapler?
The expression, may I, is the polite way to ask when we want to borrow something.
Next in the Lesson 46 video, Anna collects more office supplies. She collects paper clips, small pieces of paper, tape, elastic rubber bands, and more. And she borrows scissors, used for cutting, from Jonathan. What do you think she's going to make with all of those things? Let's listen.
Happy birthday, Marcia.
Thanks, Anna. I love birthday gifts. Anna, it is interesting. What is it?
Well, I know you love hats and you need office supplies. So this is your own office supply hat.
Wow, that is a lot of office supplies.
Many people loaned or shared their supplies with me. Some people really love their office supplies. It has paper, pens, tape, erasers, rubber bands, binder clips, paper clips, and a light.
What is the balloon for?
The balloon will help your friends find you. Let's try it. You get a seat in the restaurant, I will find you. Sometimes all the money in the world can't buy the perfect gift. Till next time.
It's true. Sometimes the best gifts are the ones we make ourselves. Anna has made Marcia a unique hat. That's spelled U-N-I-Q-U-E, and means that it is very special and not like any others.
In English, we call a unique item a one-of-a-kind, meaning there are no others that are the same as it.
Yes, and this certainly is a one-of-a-kind hat. Anna took a small round container and connected all the office supplies to it. So now Marcia can walk around with a hat of office supplies.
And a red balloon on top, too.
There's always something silly going on with Anna. But when we listen to Anna talk about office supplies, we can hear a very common aspect of American pronunciation. She uses many words that end in the letter R, such as paper, rubber, eraser, and binder.
And on the Learning English website, in Lesson 46 of Let's Learn English, you can find a pronunciation video that explains this. Let's listen to it.
In this lesson, you hear Anna using many words that end in the letter R.
It has paper, pens, tape, erasers, rubber bands, binder clips, paper clips, and a light.
One difference between British and American English is the sound of er at the end of a word.
In American English, that sound is a strong er, as in stapler. In British English, the sound is closer to ah, stapler.
It has paper, pens, tape, erasers, rubber bands, binder clips, paper clips, and a light.
Now that Anna has made her special hat, she needs to return the scissors to Jonathan and the stapler to Amelia.
Yes, and she especially needs to give Amelia her stapler back. I think Amelia would be very upset if that didn't happen. You know, this reminds me of an expression that I learned when I was in Japan. It was, only a fool loans a neighbor his scissors.
Well, you know, that reminds me, there is a famous expression in English.
Wait, is that by the famous British playwright William Shakespeare?
Yes, and I think you know what I'm about to say.
I think I do.
In Shakespeare's famous play, Hamlet, a man is saying goodbye to his son. And he gives his son some advice. And one of the things he says is, neither a borrower nor a lender be, for loan oft loses both itself and friend, and borrowing dulls the edge of husbandry.
That's some fancy English. But what it means is, if you lend someone money, you might not get it back. And so you might lose your friendship with the person who borrowed your money. And if you borrow too much money, then you might not keep your house or family in good financial condition. And that's because you will owe too much money.
I guess that is good advice. But, Jill, I was going to ask you, do you have $20 I could borrow to take a taxi home? I forgot my wallet today.
Well, I feel pretty good about our friendship, so for today at least, I'm going to go against Shakespeare's advice and be a lender.
I'm glad you are a lender B, and I shall give thy money back to thee.
Now, you're just using fancy English for the fun of it. Don't worry, I trust you. Well, listeners, we trust that you enjoyed this lesson of the day on the Learning English Podcast. Thanks for listening.
Remember that you can also find us on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. Thanks again for listening. I'm Andrew Smith.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
That's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Mario Ritter Jr.